Art Chat is made possible by the support of the Artistics Harmonies Association. Create your next aha experience with us. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Art Chat. I'm your host, Linda Riesenberg-Fissler, and today we are going to talk about prioritizing your business actions. And we'll get into this pretty deeply, but I wanted to welcome my business partner at Artistic Harmonies, John Anderson. Welcome, John.
Hello, everybody. It's good to have you here.
Yeah. So I wanted to also thank our listeners for everyone who has been following us on this series. This is the sixth episode of this, and we did the last episode on value and values. And I know everybody's going, I understand values. I do value studies. I look, you know, it's not that kind of value. Okay. We're talking about business value in that one. And so we really would like for folks that haven't talked about or haven't listened to that one yet to listen about to that in the future and all of the previous sessions, because I think there are little nuggets in there for everyone to glean out of there and be able to use in their business. So today, though, we're going to be talking about starting with a blank slate. And before everybody says, oh, I'm already 20 years into my business or anything, let's hold on. There's things called rebranding. There's things that may come to you if you just put a blank slate out there and say, you know, okay, I'm going to act like I'm starting out day one, but yet I have all this wisdom and knowledge from the X amount of years that I have in place. And I'm just going to act like it's a blank space and I'm going to put in there what I think I need. And what we're going to do in this art chat is talk about a range of steps to start a business. And one of the things, John, I'm gonna throw some stuff in here a minute, and I know I didn't go over this with you in the green room, but I know you'll be okay with it, so I'm just gonna jump in. Okay. So we talked a little bit in the green room about creativity and how we use creativity in our businesses, and how we use creativity to create our artwork, our music, our product, if you want to call it that, and you know, the processes are very similar. As we go through and start talking about the different episodes here, you can find a similar step in creativity if you let yourself do that. Some folks will, you know, oh, I don't need to know about the business stuff. I'm going to do this my way. And that's like the first step to not having a successful business. So, you know, I get a little concerned when I hear artists say, I'm just going to wing it, you know, because that's the type of person I am. I wing it with my art. I wing it with my music. Well, no, you're not really winging it. If you sit down and look about, you know, and really look at the zone that you're in and the steps that you're taking and really kind of examine that. I did a talk at the Representational Art Conference where we talked about whether or not creativity was a cognizant behavior. And, had a number of artists that came to me and said, it's not cognizant. We're in the zone. And I'm like, no. Next time you're in the zone, just, you know, stay there, but just notice that there's a process that you're using when you are creating. So it is, while we think it's not cognizant, it very much is cognizant because we learn throughout that whole process what it is we want to do and what it is. What are the correct steps or the steps that made us successful? Not really correct, but steps that made us successful that we continue to build upon. And the other things that we jettison that don't help us. So with this business series, what we're trying to do is make that part of that cognizant decision to take your business to the next level, to create a business, to get you started in whatever that business is. So how's that for a good start off, John?
That's great. You know, what I'm going to talk about today can be done with any business. And I was telling Linda back in the green room, I have consulted with so many businesses that they're not aware that really what they're doing is being creative. I mean, you don't have to pick up a paintbrush to be creative. You have to just be able to make decisions and take actions to get things done. But it all starts with what we call that aha moment or coming up with that idea. And it doesn't have to be restricted to your business. when you get up in the morning and you start through your day, you go through putting together your priorities, and I need to do this, this, and this. And somewhere along the way, you'll have that aha moment that says, wait a minute, I can do this first and I can get it done twice as fast, et cetera, et cetera. And then you take action and do that. And Linda brought up a very good point about businesses, that even when you have a plan and you have a set strategy, which we'll talk a little bit about today, you'll learn to pivot. You'll learn to say, well, I thought it was a good idea to do this, this, this. It's not working out. So I'm going to change my strategy. I'm going to pivot and go in another direction. And I'm going to adjust my timetable and adjust my priorities. And you have to be cognizant of those things. Yeah, I know. Now I have got a word.
Priority, cognizant. Yeah. Why do we do this?
Yeah, I feel like holding up a sign that says, you get the idea.
Absolutely.
But I am going to start today talking about things that I've used throughout businesses. Linda brought up a great point. One of the quickest way to fail is to wing it, because there are things that you should do. And one of them I suggest is stay away from the internet, because my gosh, if you've ever said, looked up how do I start a business, they say, here's 10 points, and they miss 15 before the first point. And so you find yourself down the road and you're filing documents and you're doing all this stuff and you're pulling resources together, and you lose sight of your mission and your vision of really where you wanted to go. Mm-hmm. So I'll get right to my points here. Again, ideas, they're everywhere. When you get an idea, if it's related to a business, you usually say, well, what would I need? How do I get this started? Where would I go? Who would I talk to? And so those are all things that lead you down the path of pulling together research to even see if the idea is feasible. The one thing that you're looking for when you develop an idea is that differentiation point about, if you ask the question, what consumer out there is going to buy my product or service? Some of the research that you'll do will be about your competition. And you're going to find that you need to be able to differentiate yourself from your competition in one way or another in order to get people to switch or say that's a more desirable way to achieve what I want as a consumer. And so those are all things that come together. And that's why this planning process, this prioritizing is important. Now, who does this? Well, you've got several options here. You can be a sole business owner. It takes a pretty smart person to do that. And I know y'all are very, very smart, but an individual who attempts to do a business with no help, it takes a longer amount of time to get it on track and get it functioning properly. As an organizer of that business, or like Linda and I are, we're co-founders with Artistic Harmonies, we bounce off of each other's skills. We say, well, what do we need to do this week? And how do we get going on this, that, and the other? And so we act as the organizers of the business, or the founders. And then what we deal with is our primary stakeholders. Now, in the instance and where we are on our business timeline, our stakeholders are the artists, the creative people. They are the people that are depending upon us to give them some new, fresh ideas that will lead to new aha moments for them, where they can actually strengthen their business, make more money. That's a big thing. And do the other things that create value. And again, we're going to have a series of coming up pretty soon as we finish this introductory series, talking about value and values in detail. There's a lot that I know you think you know, but there's some things that are related to creating more value for your creative nature and doing more of the objectives and the goals that you have set up for yourself. And so you're going to go through a maze of decisions and actions.
Right.
Let me ask you real quickly. When you are considering things just within your art business, how do you make your decisions and take actions on that?
Well, I think that's probably where there's a, I don't know how to answer this, I guess. Is if I think about the artists who have quote unquote made it, if you want to call it that, and are having a good return, actually sell their work at higher prices. You know, I think it's because they actually have gone through that thought process of, you know, who, what, when, where, why, how. And really have stuck to their individual business plans that they have, and probably have a group of people, business-centric people, who help them figure that out. For folks that don't do that, I think it's really hard to break through that ceiling, that glass ceiling of the difference of that, But yet I think they also reinforce that behavior because they'll tell themselves, you know, well, I'm a creative person. I'm supposed to be winging it. I don't need to have this, you know, business thing. If I sell, I sell. It's okay. You know, I'm happy when I sell. Well, let's get more happy. You know, let's get less frustration and more happy. And it's okay. I mean, you hear all the different cliches that are out there. Like, I paint what I want to paint. And if it sells, that's great. And to me, I mean, the more I think about that, I probably have said every one of those different cliches that are out there. It doesn't make you feel any better. It just makes you feel more comfortable, you know, in the space that you're taking up. I mean, it takes a lot of work, whether you're selling at any price point. It doesn't matter what the price point is, whether you're selling high or low, it takes a lot of work to find those people and to get them, you know, how many of us have had one time only sales where the person doesn't come back and buy a second painting? And maybe they will in the future, maybe they won't, I don't know, but wouldn't it be better to know that going into the sale, like, and tell them about what you're going to be doing and how your value is going to be increasing? And you know, I really see in the art industry that we don't think about our artwork as a product or as a commodity. Some of us do, maybe some of the ones that are in that elite class, maybe they do, the people selling at Sotheby's, maybe they do. But there's a number and a group of us that just kind of keep following the breadcrumbs, hoping something's going to happen instead of taking that power in our hands and saying, this is a commodity. I can't have this emotional attachment to it. Yeah. You want to call them your children, and we do, but they're not really your children. They're your product. And it's what you want to try to get out into the world and sell at the value and the price that it is supposed to sell at. So if others can, I mean, there's nothing more convincing than looking at somebody who's selling through Sotheby's or Christie's or through a gallery, a high-end gallery, and making those high prices. And yet you see talent out there every day that doesn't have that opportunity. So what's the difference? I mean, ask yourself what the difference is. How did they get in the door? Probably because they had a good business concept and a business plan that somebody liked and said, I can see that value going up in the years to come. The value of that person, the value of that art going up in the years to come. So instead of doing things like knocking Thomas Kinkade and Bob Ross, let's look at their business strategy, because honestly, if I could market like that, if I could be a name like that, and I you know, we can throw in the popular artists today. If I could do what Kwan Ho is doing, or Kevin McPherson, or Damien Hirst, or Jeffrey Koons, or whoever, would I be upset with that? And, you know, we jump very, very quickly, John, and say, you know, oh, that's not really art, or, oh, he's just doing it because he's making money off of it in marketing. Well, yeah, hello, that's what we want to do. I mean, you know, yeah, you could say that Thomas Kinkade was a painter of light and he did all the little castles and that's what he's known for. Well, have you seen Thomas Kinkade's impressionist work? I have. It's pretty darn good. So let's stop the conversation of all those guys are just taking your money and they aren't real artists, to how can us real artists use the same marketing and business concepts and tools to get where we want to get? So I guess in a roundabout way, that's the way I would answer your question, John. I know it doesn't talk about what I do specifically, but.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to know in general, because again, I don't know the art business in the way that you do, but I do know the aspects of creating value in a business, improving that value, getting the most out of that value, and being able to watch that grow. And in effect, that's what you're doing as an artist. You know, when you talked about Sotheby's or Christie's, I thought, you know, for every piece of artwork that sells for a high price at those auction houses, there's what, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 bettors that walk away empty-handed? They had money to spend. How do you reach those people? And so I think that galleries are waiting for people to walk in, or they have somebody that's a favorite that they've convinced that as a gallerist, they know what they're doing.
Just let me insert a point here before I forget it. And what's wrong with you asking the gallery what their marketing plan is?
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's a part of it. Ask them how they brand their gallery. You know, what is it you're doing to get more people in? What was your walk-in count? I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of things, especially when you go in and you ring up a restaurant, it gives you a little graph, tells you what the busy times are. I bet you a gallery doesn't do that. And so how do you know they're getting any traffic at all? So I'm going to say a lot of things that are unfamiliar to the art industry, or that they go, gosh, I never thought of that, or would that really work? Well, you know, that's why we're here, because when I get down to the talk on value, you're going to see that when you finish a painting and you painted something in the year 2015, and you figured out what you wanted for that painting, and through your own means, you put it on the market at $3,000, it stayed there for 2 or 3 years or 2 years, and you took it off the market, then you decide to put it back in the market again. You don't go back in at $3,000. That painting has gained value because you, as a creative or as an artist, have increased personally in your value. And so there's a lot of nitty-gritty circumstances that we're going to teach you, and you're going to learn, that are going to help you enhance your business and enhance the value of what you do. And they're not always right up front. You know, they're not always somebody looks at a painting and says, oh, that's just beautiful, I've got to have it. There's other things within that painting, the technical story, which we want to teach those people that aren't creative, but like to collect art. We want to teach them that technical aspect. We want them to know what to look for when they see a painting. So as an artist, you have to be on your toes. And as a business person, you have to be on your toes. So anyway, I kind of got off track a little bit, but that's what this is all about. It's knowing clearly what your purpose for you is and for your business. And if you've got that down, you can achieve any kind of creative dream that you want. I was on a program last night, and they were consisted of several entrepreneurs. And one of them said, well, you know, I don't have the money to do this and that and the other. And I said, just think about it. Microsoft started in a garage. And Twitter and Google, they all started with one or two people, the co-founders and the primary stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And they built their business through strategies with a single idea. And I always refer to the light bulb. When Edison created the light bulb and it didn't light for the first 15 times he tried, he didn't abandon it. He pivoted and said, well, this is what I'm going to do. And the light bulb glowed. And just remember, there was only one light bulb at that time. he grew it into the magnificent product that it is. So I want you to keep that in mind. So if you know the purpose of your business, you know your own purpose, it's time to learn those things that will help you start a business or help you grow your business. You may say, well, I'm way past that. I'm 20 years down the road. Yeah, but are you getting the maximum value out of your business? Is it achieving your dream? As Linda said, there's a lot of artists out there that's saying, why am I not being discovered? Why am I not this? Or why am I not getting 10 times the money for my art? It's just as good as so-and-so's. It's because you have to have the correct strategies and be able to think on your feet and wait for that aha moment that will let you do well. Mm-hmm. Then I always add to people, because the first thing you do is you don't do a business plan right up front. I mean, it's okay to figure out what the purpose of your business is, but if you do a business plan, you've locked yourself into that direction. And before you know it, you say, ooh, I should have done this differently or that differently. We're going to try to get you to think creatively from the standpoint of knowing what your strengths are, your weaknesses, finding the opportunities out there, and staying away from the pitfalls. A lot of artists say, well, I'll study under so-and-so, and so-and-so turns out to be a flake, and that's a pitfall. And you know, again, I tell it like it is, so if I'm offending somebody out there, I apologize. But
John does not hold back.
I do not hold back. And I talk it like I see it. And my limited time in the art business, I see a lot of artists that are just stagnant out there. They need answers. Well, you have to work your way through the maze of questions to make decisions to get the answers.
Yeah, and stagnant artists is not the same as a flake. Let's make that clear.
That's true. So. And I give flakes their due. Some of them do very well for what they're doing. I've always found those people not to value other people that much. They value the dollar more than they do people, and that won't get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
So anyway,
don't say names.
This is more like a psychological talk of, well, this is how John Anderson thinks. But there's a lot of truth in what I tell you. Well, not a lot. It is truthful. So we know your strengths, weaknesses, find the opportunities, stay away from the pitfalls. Don't write your business plan first, but research, network, do those things that bring value to your work. Did you have something you wanted to plug in there?
Oh, just basically saying that there's enough pie for everybody. So,
yes.
Because a lot of times I'm not going to say a lot of times, sometimes what happens is some undercutting that goes on between artists or musicians, or it's not just the art industry, it's every industry out there. I mean, even in corporate America, there's undercutting that goes on, gaslighting, if you want to call it that, you know, and it's amazing when like you find somebody else, a kindred spirit that has a bad experience or something like that. It's amazing how the dynamic is usually the same. How they were dealt with, how, you know, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, been there. Oh, done that. So, sure. You know, it's just like, there's enough pie for everybody. There's enough people out there who run the gambit of, I want art that matches my couch to, I want art that intrigues everybody who walks through my doors. You know, so there's enough pie out there for everybody. We don't need to be nasty. We don't need to be, you know, trying to steal somebody else's collectors or whatever. But if you get behind, I mean, yeah, you could turn around and say, I mean, if I think about the diaper business, for example, there's always, you know, we got to be better than Huggies. And if we're Pampers, we got to be better than Huggies. If we're Huggies, we got to be better than Pampers. And then, you know, we got to corner the market. Sure, there's all that kind of stuff. But if I drew a line saying where corporate America may be a little bit different than the art industry, that would probably be where the line is, in that what we're marketing to, the tastes are so strong with how that person identifies, connects with, and wants to buy art, that type of relationship where they switch brands, if you will, may or may not occur. I mean, I think that's so far down the road of where we are trying to create these innovative models that, you know, maybe that does happen in the years to come, but certainly right now that isn't true. Like John said, there's, you know, a number of people that are walking out of these auctions who lost their bids and have money to buy something that sparks them and gets them interested in having that painting or that sculpture or something in their house. So, you know, we're starting at the beginning where that blanks with the slate of what it is that we need to do to kind of get the stagnant art market back on its tracks and going. So
I was going to say, and if we can go back to the diapers for a minute, when you think about it, in order to get better than somebody, you have to go back to that thing that I call differentiation. Mm-hmm. A diaper is a diaper, yet innovations are made to them to an extent that it makes them more desirable to new mothers than, say, another diaper. And then once you build your brand and you get that person's loyalty, you're fixed. And you'll hear a lot of gallerists say, oh, I've got a buyer that would love this painting. Well, sure, you know, you've gained their loyalty. They're going to come back to you to see what's new in the marketplace. But who suffers when that happens? The artist does. Mm-hmm. So we're going to surprise you with some things. I know I keep talking about value, but we're going to be talking about the value of your idea, the value of your leadership, the value of having a patron or stakeholders in the work that you do, and the value of knowing what your market is. Your work may sell well in a particular market, but not so well in another. You know, winter scenes sell well, I guess, in the South. And when you're talking about seashore scenes, they probably sell well in the North where everybody's freezing to death. I don't know that part. But anyway, so how do we get there? We get there through our business strategies and our priorities. And so what I'm trying to get you to think about is, how do I set up my priorities? Well, you basically, and we're going to get there in a few minutes, I'm going to show you how to set up a timeline that will help you say, well, okay, I got an idea. This is what I want to do. I'm going to go over the strengths, the weaknesses, and the opportunities, and I'm going to check out the market. And now I'm going to plan the first 6 months of my business without writing a business plan. And so I'm going to show you how to do that. It's very easy. And again, I think that by way of networking and talking to people that know, you're going to say, wow, I didn't know this is what the value of a particular piece meant. I didn't know that that's got a present value and a future value. And how is that calculated? And how can I help push that along? Well, you can do it through the technical aspect of the painting. You can do it through your marketing plan, knowing that it's a lot easier if you can tell somebody, well, I've sold 30 paintings this year, as opposed to saying, well, this is my first sale this year. So a lot of things, and you'll discover those not only through Art Chat, but if you'll become a member with us and work with us, you'll glean a lot of information off your fellow artists, and they won't be, they're not going to hate to give it to you, because again, it's a mutual goal to create an opportunity for good. And that good must flow to the creative people in the industry and not to the power brokers, if you will. So I'm going to talk about some radical things, but that's, I wanted to get that point across. And I want to add one more thing. You can't be obsessed with your work. You have to have a good work-life balance. I can't tell you how much I appreciate Linda because she's on the move all the time. She'll tell me I'm going to my studio and I'll be there for 3 hours, 4 hours. And then she says, then I'm going for a bike ride, or I've got a friend I want to go hiking with. You still end up during that time thinking, talking, working your way through the maze, asking yourself questions to reach decisions. But that's another thing I like about Linda is that she's got a very level head when it comes to those things. So,
thank you, John.
Okay. So just as I said, make sure that you have a good work-life balance. How do you do that? Well, let's say you set up, what do you consider your examples for things that you want out of life? It can be time with family. It can be your health. It can be the wealth, the business that you do, the work that you do. Exercise is big. Not so much with me, but it's big. And getting the proper sleep. So you set your goals toward each one of those areas, and then you'll discover that your life will run a lot smoother, your business will run a lot smoother, and you're prioritizing your time in a correct way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And when I talk about prioritizing, I talk about two. Take time to spend time with your stakeholders, manage your resources, take time to do networking. You may do that when you're riding a bike, or you may do that when you're just talking to people on the trail, you know, however you spend that good time for you.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Can you bring up that graph that I put together? Sometime a timeline is referred to as a roadmap because essentially it shows you where you are at the time, whether you're starting a business or whether you're getting ready to make a change in the business in order to maximize your values. And it's going to also include that work-life balance that we talked about. Up on the screen right now is a very typical and generic 6-month roadmap in this particular instance to start a business and how you do that with planning. Well, I don't know if y'all use Excel, you can use a calendar. It's that simple. You take in month one and you say, now, what is it that I want to get done in month one? And you say, well, I've got several things I'm working on. I want to spend time with my family. I want to start my business and I want to paint more. These are what these phases are. You can have 3 phases, you can have 50 phases. But again, you have to be able to prioritize those phases in order to make everything run smoothly. Okay, so in phase one, we know that the first thing you have to do to start your business is you want to do the proper research. So we put a little tag out there and that says begin research. In this case, it's about the 5th of month one, and you're going to run that out to the middle of month two. Okay, so you're doing research. You get to a point where you say, I've got it. I got all the research I need. I've proven to myself that I'm at a go, no-go decision and I want to go. Well, you just basically stop that. Or if at the end of that time period in the second month, you're not far enough along, you move that out. And then you do that with each one of the phases that you're working on and you evaluate. How did I do? You're always self-evaluating. Did I spend enough time on this or did I not? So this is the basic thing to look at when you're doing a roadmap. The idea being that where you started in month one, you're going to be way far along in month 6 and your family's going to be happy. You're going to be happy and you won't work yourself to death. Now, if you're a workaholic, some people say, oh, well, I'll just come back to this other stuff later and keep working on my business. You do that at your own risk, really, but it's okay. That's the decisions, the strategies that you have to procure in order to meet your goals and objectives. So I know I'm talking a lot of business terms and we can expand these and go into detail, but this was the general idea I wanted you to look at just to see how we begin.
Okay. Did you want to go through the rest of these, John, and just
No, those are just, they're just generic things in there. The first one, I don't know if you can see it, choose the direction and define your audience. That's just the fancier way of saying I've done my research. Now I'm going to figure out who my competition is, where my market is, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Leverage community tools. That's networking. You know, you're going to get out there in the community and let them know what you're planning on doing. I call it a pre-launch, and then I call it a launch. I call it a grand opening. So there's a lot of different ways you can do that on the timeline with subtopics. And the next one says create a plan for business. Well, there is going to be a point in time where you need a business plan, but you have to very much shake it out and make sure that everything's in order to get that. You may need a business plan to attract resources, get sponsors, find patrons. So there's all kinds of things that that business plan will explain to somebody that's reading. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, you can do a pre-launch. You'll learn a lot from that, or you can establish a launch date on a small scale and then begin to use your strategies to build the business. So that's what that says in phase one there. And in this particular instance, it says 90 days. Linda and I met in March of 2021, and just working the way we're working, and we spent a lot of time on the phone and that kind of thing. And I went to Asheville, and we talked about the different aspects of the business. We did that for, 7 months, I guess, or 7 months, almost 9 months, because we had a pre-launch in January of this year. And what you'll see at the end of this year, and the beginning of 2023, that's going to be our dynamic aha moment that springs forward and says, okay, you wonder what we've been up to. Here's what we've done, what we've accomplished, and where we're going.
Well, and, okay. And just so folks know, too, is we definitely believe in the work-life balance. And there have been a number of different curveballs that have been thrown at both of us. in the last, you know, year and a half. And, you know, I think the stress of dealing with those was a lot less, because we said we recognize that this is an issue and we have to deal with this outside of, you know, launching Artistic Harmonies. And, you know, so while there might be some folks that are maybe a bit frustrated with us, basically the bottom line is that, you know, where we're going to be in the next 6 months to year and a half, 5 years or whatever is going to be a lot stronger, because we didn't force the work to happen when there were other issues that needed to be dealt with outside of this particular corporation, nonprofit, whatever you want to call it. We're a lot better off mentally because we didn't do that. And we're a lot better off strategically, because it's really allowed us time to hone in on what it is that we want this organization to accomplish. And just pinging a couple of our honorary members, sorry for the computer term pinging, but getting people to respond to a few questions, you know, hearing what they're saying, and they're not being coached in saying this at all, is confirming what John and I ended up getting to when we had our strategy sessions, if you will, if you want to call it that. So it's been really interesting. So if you want this particular graphic and be able to look at it, there's a blog on the Artistic Harmonies website, artisticharmoniesasoc.com. And if you just Google Artistic Harmonies, it's the first one that comes up, or at least it is when I Google it. So, so you can see it there and study it more, along with John's blog that talks about walking you through this and some other key nuggets that you'll find interesting. So, John, can I stop sharing this now?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. All righty.
That was just to give you an idea of what they look like. And again, the great thing about it is they're flexible. there's software out there. It's a little bit, I'm not going to say it's expensive because I use Excel spreadsheets and yeah. that's not expensive at all. So you can use any one of different methods to put one together. And if you want, you know, give me a call and I'll get you through the first part and we'll see how that goes for you.
Yeah. There's one thing that I would like you to talk about, John, and I think it's there in front of you. It's under building a timetable in the document you sent me.
Oh, yeah. Let me touch on one other thing, too. You'll notice, you won't notice now because we took it down on the screen, that a lot of things go on at the same time. That's mm-hmm. called cross-function planning is the technical term for it, and it's doing one or more things at the same time. And that's why you want something that's very, very adjustable.
Multitasking is another word
for it. Right, right.
All right. So Artistic Harmonies believes creative businesses that succeed in today's dynamic markets are the ones that lead with a bold mission and connect strategy to an everyday timeline. So, Pretty fancy. I'm assuming that you came up with that. So that
yeah, I did.
Okay. So, if you're sitting out there and you're going, you know, why do I need to listen to the rest of this? Or, I got it. Business strategy. Yeah. Well, you got to make, if you're spending time on it, you got to make it work. Okay. If you're spending a lot of time on it and it's not working, go revisit what your statement is, what your mission statement is, what your vision is. Ours has changed a little bit. It changed a lot last March, April, May time period, but I think we got a cohesive one now and that, yeah. you know, it is going to change. It's going to stay. And that could be found also on our website, but that statement I think really feeds into where we are. If you want to be, and I'm not going to say a popular, if you want to be an artist that has a wonderful, huge platform where people are buying your work and people are asking you to come out and do workshops, if that's what you desire to do. If you, you know, the biggest thing I think that we all say when we get into this business is, I want to sell my work. Well, if you want to sell your work, what are you trying to do to make that sell, to make that desirable? That's the word I was looking for. And that all goes back to all of this planning. What is it? I mean, we all remember Thomas Kincaid was the painter of light and Bob Ross had a joy of painting. So, you know, that they boiled that mission statement down to those particular three words that stuck in people's minds. So while, you know, everybody wants to bash them, they had a great marketing plan and they had a great business plan. And they didn't do this on their own. They sought out people who had those business capabilities because they knew they were a creator. Now, also Kincaid started at Disney. One of the biggest and best marketers that are out there is Disney. And, so he started there. He sat in business meetings. He knew what, you know, he knew from those business meetings what needed to be done. And he worked on his business outside of Disney. And then when he was ready, found his stakeholders, found his people that were interested in buying his work and went for it and left Disney behind. So if you want to be those top tier artists, you got to have the business side of your entrepreneurship in order. So.
Right. Okay. And something else that I'd encourage too is keep the positive nature up in your creativity. And what I mean by that is that, again, I've heard many people say, well, I'd love to start my business, but I don't have any money. Money is not the only resource. Time is a resource. Mm-hmm. And instead of asking yourself, how much time will this take? Ask yourself, how much time do I want to spend? Because you spend time just like you do money. And there are other resources. Networking. How much time do you want to spend resources or as a resource, networking, and what's it bring you in terms of value? So I'd kind of like to end there. I just want to tell you that in the next episode, we're going to talk about how to align your priorities with your timeline. And we'll talk about the adjustment of those and how you make those decisions. So that's kind of where I am, Linda. So,
okay. So I know that I use like Bob Ross and Kincaid as as the example. And like I said, there's a lot of people out there who really don't like those two and are probably turned off whenever I use them as an example, but it's the best example of business marketing that I think everybody could identify with. And I just want to add one more additional thing. And that is, if you have one heck of a marketing plan, that doesn't mean you're selling out. Okay. Because a lot of the conversation that you hear about this is, he sold out. He has this big marketing thing. But again, I would venture to say that if Monet was alive today, he'd be out there with one heck of a marketing plan because he was doing that at Giverny. I mean, I've been to Giverny, I've sat there, I've looked at this and I went, wow, this guy was ahead of his time. I mean, at the time that he was alive, he had this place, he would love gardening. He had his flowers. He had the water lilies. He had all of that. It's a bigger place than you think it is in your mind, but it's also, when I got there, it was a smaller place than what I thought it was. So that dynamic can happen. It was a lot smaller than I thought. I thought he owned, acres upon acres upon acres, but he really didn't. But he made use of what he had, and he made use of it very well. And at the end of his life, he was probably a lot better off because he understood what his product was, what he was selling, and at the same time held true to chasing light and finding light and what he wanted to try to accomplish with his artwork. So it wasn't very stagnant. If you look through the beginning of his time to when he started having cataract issues, and then after he had his cataracts worked on, what the paintings look like after that. So it's not, when I'm throwing out Thomas Kincaid and I'm throwing out Bob Ross, I could very easily be throwing out the word Monet or the name Monet as well as any of the other ones. And let's be honest about the big, I can't think of the word, but it's at the Biltmore right now. There's a Monet and Friend, and you walk in, it has all the screens around.
Oh, that's Van Gogh, isn't it?
Well, Monet has one now too. Monet and Friends. Wow. So wow. Whatever company that's pulling this together is bringing the artwork of Van Gogh and Monet. And I think there's one on Rembrandt that's coming to the Biltmore in Nashville after the Monet one leaves. So, I mean, if this is a particular company that had the vision to do this and they're using the art of past masters to get people in the door and to reconnect them with art, what can we do as artists to expand that and make that happen? That's their marketing plan, but what can we do? What can Artistic Harmonies do? I mean, we had this conversation probably 6 months ago, John, about what we could do in this particular set, and we're not going to tell you, but because that's our proprietary information. But anyway,
unless you're willing to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Come on, we don't operate that badly, I don't think. I'm kidding. But yeah. But seriously, they're bringing these huge tall works, which are digitally remastered. And we all know that, there's some issues with the digital, being seen on the internet, your painting versus being seen in life. But they're bringing a museum to people in a different way than if people would walk into the doors of a brick and mortar museum and see the actual painting. Why is that happening? Why are they making that desirable? I mean, just start boiling down some of the different things that you're seeing happening in the art world today and ask yourself, those questions of who, what, when, where, why, and how. And see how that's changing the impression of the people that are out there watching this. I mean, most of the people that are walking into those big shows, you know, as an artist and who knows a lot about those particular artists, you know, I usually stand there and laugh because he's like, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, really? It's been in front of you for years. So, you know, it's kind of like the time when I was in Giverny. One more story and then we'll hang it up for the day. But I was in Giverny and I was walking around and I was just like in heaven. Okay. Cause Monet is one of my favorites. And, you know, I did a study of his work when I was learning how to paint, and I was standing there, like the house was behind me and I was just looking at his flower garden. And then there's a road that goes in between the flower garden and the lily pond. So I was just standing there looking at it going, wow, you know, this is really great. And this American woman walked out and said, well, that was a waste. I didn't want to see that. I wanted to see his studio. And she was like real loud in saying this. And I turned to her and I said, you're standing in his studio. And she just kind of looked at me and went, huh? I said, he was a plein air painting. He was a plein air painter. You're standing in his studio. This is where he stood and painted. And she's like, oh. And she had like the biggest letdown.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for her. She flew all the way to France thinking she was going to see Monet's studio and didn't do anything about it. So I just kind of laughed and walked off. It was like, well, you're lost. You didn't do your research. But, you know, I mean, I was like in heaven and here she was like in her worst, you know, Hades ever. So, so anyway, we hope the business series are helping you out and making you think a little bit about what it is you want to accomplish and what your goals are, what your mission is. You know, I don't hear a lot of today's artists talk about that things in their way. They come up with an idea and yeah, they'll go and research it, but how much time could they have saved if they had thought about all these things ahead of time. So we hope you're enjoying the series. Like John said, episode 7 is going to be how to align the priorities with the timeline. And you said something about what's the homework for the next art chat. I don't really have any homework for them. Do you have homework for them, John? What do you want them to do?
I want them to go to the website and take in as much as you possibly can and join up.
Yeah. So, and I want to say also, I know that there's been a lot of news around Twitter and the takeover that happened, not naming names. Everybody knows who he is. But we do have a social media platform if you are a member of Artistic Harmony. So if you're looking for artist networking opportunities, if you become a member of it, you automatically get access to that social media platform and you can post questions and you could talk about your business and you can, you know, find inspiration from other artists. So the more folks that become member, the better we are going to have in a social media platform that is targeted to creatives. So something to think about. And that's open to our basic members as well as our premium members. So and there will possibly be advertising there in the future, but it will not be in the newsfeed. It will be static and it will be people who believe in our mission and in our vision statement. So a little bit different there. Just wanted to pop that in there as well. So we will see you in a couple of weeks. Also want to let you know that there will be some other art chats that will be popping up as well. I'm trying to schedule some of our honorary members to join us for an art chat, as well as some other artists and movie producers and other folks that are creatives that could bring in and possibly generate some ideas and inspiration for us. So,
and we have some business people too that I expect to come in during our value series that will be able to clearly address things about value that you probably haven't thought about.
So. Right. Yeah. So that'll be good. And you know, now's the chance to join us on the ground level and grow with us and be a part of the work that we're doing. So thank you again for listening and tuning in. John, thanks again for all of the important work that you're doing and also for sharing you know, the series with us, not only just the values and value, and but also the business strategy and different things like that. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye everyone. Have a good day. Art Chat is made possible by the support of the Artistics Harmonies Association. Create your next aha experience with us.